Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end,
been to the Bet the Board podcast, Final Four edition. As we know, the four teams vying for the college basketball national championship. I'm your co-host, Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. And of course, joined as always by Payne Insider at Payne Insider. Payne, if you come down from your emotional high watching South Carolina punch their ticket, however improbably, to Glendale.
Yeah, I guess that's probably the right verbiage. I just got done slamming a cold chicken breast here before we got on the podcast so I could have a little energy for this thing.
Hey, it's all about sustaining yourself this time of year, and a busy time for the Bet the Board podcast. Not only the Final Four that we're talking about today, Major League Baseball preview on the horizon, and we're going to delve into we'll call it uncharted territory next week with a Masters podcast. Not quite sure how that's going to go, my friend.
Fingers crossed.
Hey, we can always spin it as best we can, but we do have some interesting guests lined up for that. They should be able to fill in the gaps for some of our lack of golf knowledge. Of course, we'll break
We'll just use your strategy. We'll use the Furman strategy. Hold the prick and pray.
I mean, that may be a discussion for a different day. Hey, real quick, and I know it's already in the rear view. Anything really surprise you from what we saw from the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight matchups?
Not really. We were pretty high on Oregon. Unfortunately, rather than going side, I chose to go first half under. So that stung a bit there when you get Dana Altman obviously doing things correctly, getting the 2-for-1, but you get the front rim backboard in and then the bank shot from 28 feet. So that became a double whammy when we like Oregon, like the total, choose the side. Choose the total. That goes down in flames. And then the side wins very comfortably. So it's been a little rough for us with the fortunes in the tournament.
It has not always been the best. Fortunately for our listeners, we've tried to identify two of the strongest positions that we've taken. Princeton the opening weekend, Kentucky coming through for us against UCLA in the round of 16. Hopefully we'll be able to isolate something to get folks to the window for Sunday's game. And we'll get to those games in greater detail along with a few thoughts on the current future price odds. Busy show, though, today. Obviously, we'll have Dave Mason will join us in just a matter of minutes. And I'm sure we'll get plenty of interesting thoughts from Jeff Freeman, the AGA president and CEO on the Raiders' move to Las Vegas, and some of his organization's ongoing initiatives. Fascinated to get his take and see what's changed, Payne, since we had him on during football season, talking about their ongoing efforts for legalization. Time to welcome in our weekly contributor, Dave Mason from Bet Online. You can, of course, follow Dave on Twitter, like always, at Dave Mason BOL. And Dave, first things first, I guess I should ask, pretty good weekend for the house for the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games?
Yeah, it was another good weekend. We opened strong the week before and kept it going this past weekend. No complaints at all. Action's good. The actives are up, and the game, a lot of the games fell our way. So especially Saturday's game, the Zags in Oregon, both huge house needs. So it was a very good weekend for the house.
One of those games. Oh, go ahead, Payne.
No,
ahead,
I was just going to say, you just kind of, you know, extrapolating on that. You talk about good decisions this past weekend. Has there been a great decision for the house? What's been the best one so far for the entire tournament?
Probably that Oregon over Kansas on Saturday. That was a big one. The week before, some big ones. Wisconsin over Villanova, that was a big one. And but probably this past weekend, Oregon game was big. I think there's about 75% of the money was on the Jayhawks, so that was a big one. And then there was just so much action on it too. You know, as you get fewer and fewer games, you know, there's great action to open a weekend, but there's so many games that people have their action spread out a little bit more. But, you know, as the games get less and less, fewer and fewer, everybody has money on the Elite Eight games, and the Final Four games are even bigger, obviously, and then the final game's even bigger. So, you know, where a game in the Sweet 16, 80% of the action might be on one side, you know, 70% actions on the side on the Elite Eight, that decision will be bigger because there's just so much more money on that game.
So despite having some good decisions there, like Payne alluded to, Dave, what's kind of been the worst game for the House? Is it safe to say UCLA-Cincinnati in the round of 32 may have been that one?
That was big. Kansas over Purdue, that one was a whopper.
Very good point.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest, either of those two. But Kansas over Purdue, that was probably the biggest.
And then when we look at how March Madness, we know it's growing in popularity. We're going to have a chance to talk to Jeff Freeman later on in the podcast. How does it compare overall betting handle in March to the Super Bowl? We know there's a lot more volume of games, but clearly not the same laundry list of props and the other betting options available.
Right. You know, Super Bowl's king. We all know that. It's kind of hard to compare and since it's one game versus, 64 games or whatever the heck it is. Overall, March Madness is bigger, but again, that's just because there's so many games. You know, there'll be more on the Super Bowl than probably all last weekend. That would probably be a big comparison, a good comparison of Super Bowl versus last weekend's games. There's just so much money on that Super Bowl. I mean, everybody is just signing up and putting money on it. You know, March Madness as a whole, it's probably our second biggest betting event of the year. But there's just so many games that it's hard to compare.
As we transition to this weekend in the Final Four, of the remaining teams, any of them present huge future liabilities for the House?
No, we're good there. Heading into the tournament, we had a liability on the Tar Heels, but our guys have been pretty good taking action, even that out. That's a small win for the House now. Oregon and South Carolina, we're biggest fans of those teams from a future standpoint. Those would be huge winners for the House. Gonzaga would be very good, and like I said, UNC would be a small winner. But now we're not in the red on any of those teams, so we're in a good position there.
How do the pros and Joes start to line up for the tandem of games we have on Saturday this weekend, Dave?
Not much pro action yet. We got some sharp on UNC over 149. That's at 151.5, I believe, right now. As far as the public, South Carolina and Gonzaga, about 60% of the bets are on South Carolina, and about the over-under action is pretty 50-50. As far as Oregon and UNC are concerned, 59% of the bets are on the Tar Heels, and the over is going to be a big sweat, it looks like, as 82% is on the over. That's up to 151.5, like I said.
And Dave, you talked about actives being up, so we know players are excited about some of the betting options they can expect at BetOnline. Baseball season, obviously, right around the corner, and you guys have some pretty major changes coming to your baseball lines as well, correct?
Our dime lines are always real high, so they're going to be high once again this year. So, you know, we discuss it every year. You know, a lot of books break they advertise their dime lines, but they break them at like 145, 150, and ours are breaking up around 185 this year. So that's good news for all the baseball bettors. You want to get the best value, come on over to Bet Online. They'll get dime lines up to 185, plus our odds will hit the screen before every other book that just impacts that value even more. So, you know, early lines and dime lines up to 185, that's a great combination.
And for the folks that are looking to try and load up their accounts, what kind of promotions can they expect at the shop this weekend?
If you do not have a BetOnline account, sign up at betonline.ag and use promo code 75BTB, that's 75BTB, for a first-ever deposit bonus of 75%. If you already have a BetOnline account, use promo code 35BTB for a one-time 35% reload bonus for the sports book. Maximum bonus on either of those offers is $1,000 worth of free plays. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
Always appreciate your intel, Mr. Mason, whether it's football, basketball, or some of the other big things we have on the horizon at Bet the Board. Best of luck this weekend in the Final Four, and of course, opening Sunday for Major League Baseball. We'll chat again real soon, my friend.
All right, fellas. Have a good weekend.
That was Dave Mason of Bet Online. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason, BOL. Payne, it sounds like Dave and the boys have had a pretty good run this March, especially of late.
all things even out, my friend. What goes up must come down. So the last 10 weeks or so of the NFL, not the greatest, but they get it back with the largest event overall when you talk about the course of 3 weeks with the NCAA tournament. Obviously, some big games still left for the house, the games that will have the most volume moving forward. So decisions there will be key to kind of wrap up a solid tournament for the books.
And I think it's important to note, too, that Dave talks about how the decisions continue to grow in size and scope the deeper we get into the tournament. So you could have a bad decision opening weekend, but it more than offsets it when you get a team like Oregon as a 6.5, 7-point underdog to not only cover against Kansas, but win that game outright, blowing a money line parlay liability, blowing up teasers, and of course cashing all those straight bets. So important for folks. We know that there is an abundance of misinformation that circulates through social media, but it's all about winning the right decisions as a bookmaker before you talk about, oh, the house is in a bit of a tough spot, they've lost this decision, and why people shouldn't fall victim to some of the bet splits. But as we look, Payne, at the odds to win the national title right now from BetOnline, North Carolina, we'll call them a slight favorite. I don't want to use the word overwhelming, at plus $1.35. Gonzaga checks in behind them at plus 175. You're looking at Oregon right in the middle there at 4-1. And of course, South Carolina, the prohibitive long shot at 7-1. The Gamecocks, you could have had at 250-1, 300-1 before the season started, and even 200-1 to win the national title before the NCAA tournament started at BetOnline.
Yeah, I actually saw as high as 300-1 about 3 weeks ago. That was interesting to me. Not to rehash, but you know, with the decisions of the house, I think that's a good teaching point to our listeners. You know, because there aren't 30 games to scatter your money about, doesn't mean that these specific games yield more of an edge to you, so you should be taking what you would have bet on 10 games across the board and plopping on one, or saying, oh, this is the final four, I'm going to double down on this one. That's kind of why these numbers for sports books start to grow so significantly this time of year and in the Super Bowl and things like that. So just be cognizant of that and be disciplined this weekend, just like you should be for the Super Bowl. When it comes to futures, though, I don't see a ton of value on the board right now. We've talked about this ad nauseum with the hold. But if you had to probably pick one, you know, this isn't to kind of hint at things, but Gonzaga probably, of the two favorites, the one I would probably side with if you were to pick a favorite in the Final Four.
And if we're looking, we'll get to that in a minute, actually. Just some quick trends from the tournament. You look at over-unders, 38-25 to the over, but the last 12 games have gone 8-4 to the under. Underdogs, 30-28 against the number through 58 games this tournament. The SEC, of course, has lined your pockets to the tune of 9-3. The ACC has been breaking people's wallets to the mark of 3-13 against the spread. Just for some fun nuggets, obviously irrelevant. When we look at the two games this weekend, and let's start with the early one, Payne, where Gonzaga, a 6.5-point favorite at BetOnline, total at 138 in this game. And I think when we talk about these two teams, it's no surprise to anyone, their calling card, defensive efficiency, where they rank number one in the form of Gonzaga and number two in the form of South Carolina in the entire country.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just to kind of play off some of those trends where you depicted that they've been going over for the tournament, potentially some value here when you couple what the trends have indicated in this tournament, where the public sentiment is going to be after they hear things like that, and then you factor in the stadium that they're going to be playing, not your usual basketball gym. It's stadium setting, large backdrops, takes some getting used to, so would not be stunned if we saw professional money on both of those games. But when we talk about South Carolina and Gonzaga, you nailed it on the head. Two teams that are great with defensive efficiency. We've touched on Gonzaga defensively, number one in the nation, but more importantly, like, they allow 40% on two-point field goals, and that was enough to get them over the hump on West Virginia. West Virginia just couldn't make enough shots to get their defense going. I will say this, though. South Carolina, we know they have to bring the defense. That's a must. But when you talk about why they're here, the last three games of the regular season, they averaged 0.89 points per possession. The four tournament games, 1.12 points per possession. That's a 20% increase on offense, and that's the reason they're here. They're getting timely buckets. They're getting a lot of play out of their young big men. And then obviously you have a great guard combination that's very experienced and noticed in Thornwell.
Is that the kind of thing, in your opinion, when you see such a pronounced jump over a limited sample size, it's sustainable? I know they were the beneficiaries of playing a Marquette team that we know is a little bit lax defensively. They had an amazing second half where they dropped 65 on Duke. Now, when you watch at the eye test against Baylor and Florida, doesn't say they were that efficient offensively, but we knew, as we've mentioned, their calling card is the defense. They brought the intensity there and were able to get timely buckets. Again, battling back from a halftime deficit against the Gators to punch their ticket to Phoenix.
What we've seen from them offensively is they'll get out in spurts. When they run, they will. You know, when they can, they will. And that's provided some easy opportunities. But they're hitting big shots. And we talk about this all the time. This time of year, and I won't say this, I won't have claimed to expected this, but we hinted South Carolina had a great shot to take down Duke in our opening round podcast with Gottlieb. We just thought SMU would probably be the beneficiary of that. And so when you kind of look at South Carolina, you say, wow, okay, I kind of get it. Experienced guards, we know that's a must-come tournament time. Check that box with Thornwell notice. Come tournament time, things we know, slow down. The game goes into a half court. Can you get stops? Check that box. SC, you know, number two in defensive efficiency. Frank Martin, you know, one of the greatest defensive minds in college basketball today. So what they have used is a combination. If you've noticed, when they get those stops, if they can get out and run, they will. But timely shots. When you have Thornwell, you can get him the ball late in the shot clock and have him hit a shot. And that's been the biggest thing for them. I do think the offense has been better. Obviously, we've seen that a little bit. But the overall ball movement. You know, sometimes shots just don't fall, but you can kind of tell the difference of what they were doing the last few games of the regular season to what they're doing in the tournament. The ball isn't sticking.
I mean, is it hard to adjust a power rating for over just a four-game sample size? I mean, this was a South Carolina team. I know we're slighting Gonzaga a little bit. I don't want to say we all expected them to be here, but power number-wise, anyone who's listened understood how high we've been on the Zags all season. We know how talented they are offensively. Some major D1 transfers that are capable of filling it up. But, you know, when we look at this number here, power number-wise, public perception, are there things factoring into this point spread maybe being a touch lower because South Carolina is that Cinderella vying for a seat at the table in the national championship?
The public has their say. Everybody loves Cinderella. Mason came on here, said right now he's at about 60-40. In terms of public sentiment and tickets towards South Carolina, you would think that probably only grows a little bit more. Gonzaga, yes, it's Gonzaga, but they're not that household North Carolina Duke where it just doesn't matter. The public's going to be on them. They're gravitating towards Frank Martin, that personality. It's a great story. Where they've come from, I mean, this is a program that, you know, horrible. 14-18, his first year there. They couldn't get recruits. Finally, he lands Thornwell. Then he gets Dozier as well last season. So it's an overall, it just feels like, and you listen to every single press conference, you gravitate towards Frank Martin. The public's going to gravitate towards them. So yes, I mean, by a power number ranking, this line's 2.5 points lower than it probably should be. Without
one last thing on this game before we shift gears, Oregon, UNC. Any intangible edge you see from these two debutantes in the Final Four?
Can I say this? This is going to probably piss people off. But what we've seen from Gonzaga, and yes, they were resilient, and you kind of pointed that out before we got on the podcast against West Virginia. But West Virginia wasn't going to hit shots, and that may be the case here with South Carolina. But what we have seen is South Carolina mentally and physically tough. I don't see that from Gonzaga. Mentally, they feel a little weak. We've seen when Goss gets pressure, he doesn't like it. We saw first three games of the tournament, 9 assists, 10 turnovers. It was like 12 for 47 because he was getting bumped, because he was, you know, the guards were being physical with him. They just don't like that style of play. And so that's what's so interesting to me. I don't want to hop on Cinderella because, listen, you're not getting enough points. If you're backing South Carolina. But there is that playing loose, playing free. We're going to be more physical than you mentally and physically. And so that scares me a little bit here if I was backing Gonzaga.
It is a very interesting game, and we may have some stronger thoughts later on the podcast on this particular matchup. To the nightcap, and I guess I want to call it the Blue Bloods, but two teams who we might have expected to be here given their preseason odds. Neither one of these sides we would call a long shot. Both the prices way less than 20-1. We're looking at North Carolina, a 5-point favorite at BetOnline. Total in this game, 151.5. As we heard from Dave Mason, they have seen a little bit of money coming in on the over. Will this be the game pain where Oregon really rue the absence of Chris Boucher to protect the rim, knowing how good UNC is hitting that offensive glass?
You certainly would want Boucher for a game like this. This is one of those ones where you would love to have him. I think the key to this is what we've seen is everyone thinks Oregon's this high-octane offense. And yes, they get out when they can. But the key for them, I think, in this matchup is, can you knock down shots? Because if you can, it's going to force North Carolina to play a smaller lineup. And I think that isn't their best lineup. Luke May had a fantastic two-game stretch, 16-17 in back-to-back games, played over 20 minutes in each. Stillman White gets 5 minutes off the pine. He played well. Both likely overachieved. I just think if those guys are on the court for UNC, they just aren't as good of a ball club. And so if Oregon's knocking down shots, if Dylan Brooks is dominating offensively at the four, it's going to force UNC to not be able to play the Twin Towers. And that's probably where they would have their matchup advantage.
When we talk about matchup advantages, obviously we want to look at the sidelines as well between these two coaches, Dana Altman and Roy Williams.
You're queuing this one up for me.
That snicker right there, I have a pretty good idea where you're going to be going with this one.
It's men amongst boys. It's not close. Dana Altman is, for whatever reason, and he's at Oregon, obviously. He's got the Phil Knight money, and Oregon is, you know, kind of growing in popularity. But when you talk in coaching circles, he's really one of the most respected minds in college basketball, and he does what he does. You know, I've talked to some former players on his that have played for him, and he's running the same stuff. He's doing the same stuff because it works. That matchup zone defensively where they guard the perimeter so well, they guard the three-point line really well. If you beat them, they funnel to a big man that does – that's a great shot blocker. Obviously, Boucher is not going to be here, but that's kind of their MO, that matchup zone defensively. And so what I think is the biggest thing here is that matchup zone. Can North Carolina's guards be good enough? The key here is Barry. How healthy is he going to be? You know, he sprained the other ankle in the second game last weekend. Gary Parrish was on here last week, said Barry would basically be 70% at best the rest of the tournament. Guys were blown by him offensively. He's not hitting shots either, 6-for-26 from three. So that's kind of the one weakness when you look at North Carolina. Can they be consistent from three-point range offensively? And is Barry going to be able to stay in front of some of these guards defensively?
Yeah, and a walking boot all week. Again, they were talking about Barry potentially not getting on the court till Thursday or Friday. Obviously tough for us to obtain some of that information as we record the podcast Wednesday morning, but something that if he's nowhere close to being 100%, knowing how talented Oregon is from the perimeter, it makes laying the points with the Tar Heels a very, very delicate proposition, I would think.
We would all love to take six. But I'm not quite sure we get there.
Where does this number... I was going to ask, where do you think this number goes? We know it opened 4 in some spots, 4.5. It's out to 5. Do we think it ticks to 5.5 with an opportunity maybe to buy to 6? Or where does the love and support come in for the underdog?
Yeah, I think someone may get an itchy finger and go before they get that opportunity. But with a little work, I would think 5.5 is obtainable to get that 6 minus 15.
When we talk, and we look at the total on this particular game, safe. I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth. Mason talked about a little bit of sharp money coming in over. We saw that trend develop against Kentucky, North Carolina, where obviously you go over the lowest total that's available, knowing that you'll have some buyback opportunity. Do we think we'll see some under money from the professionals as we get closer to tip off?
Well, there's going to be a huge correlation with this game. If you like UNC, it's likely you're going to like the over. If you like Oregon, this is going to be an under game. That's just kind of, they're going to want to play half-court offense. They're going to want to be able to execute. They're going to want to be able to use Dana Altman's mind to get good shots in a half-court. I mean, you watch North Carolina. Yes, they prevailed.
They weren't good in the half-court. They weren't good by any stretch of the imagination.
They don't get good shots in the half-court. Roy doesn't give him great shots in half court.
It's all about crashing that offensive glass and getting second chance points.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's going to be the key. For
Jordan
me, it's Oregon
Jordan
or
Bell
pass.
Does Jordan Bell give Oregon enough in the interior himself?
That's the problem. God forbid that guy gets in foul trouble. That's the problem. You know, you're relying on him to basically be a one-man show defensively in the post against UNC's two or three bigs. And God forbid he gets in foul trouble. This game looks completely different. And that's why I haven't gone on Oregon yet.
We've told you where the numbers started. We told you where the numbers may go. But before we get to our picks on the big games,
we're thrilled to have this guest back on the Bet the Board podcast. He's the president and CEO of the American Gaming Association. You can, of course, follow him on Twitter at Jeff Freeman AGA. And when sports gambling ultimately gets legalized coast to coast, we know he's going to be the most popular man in America. Jeff, can't thank you enough for taking a few minutes to join us this morning.
Always enjoy it, Todd. Thank you.
Well, I mean, honestly, we were planning to have this podcast obviously focused on the gambling that takes place in and around the NCAA tournament. But, of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't start with the biggest development of the week and what unfolded on Monday, the Las Vegas Raiders. Before we get into some individual questions, I wasn't sure if you had comprehensive thoughts. I know this has to be a huge step in the right direction for your organization.
That's exactly how I would put it. This is a sign that the gaming industry, the casino gaming industry, is increasingly understood for what it is. It's one part of a multifaceted entertainment experience. You can find it in Las Vegas. You can find it in Cleveland. You can find it in Pittsburgh. And you can find it in so many other cities around the country. We're thrilled to see an NFL team come to Las Vegas. Not because I have some particular fandom for Las Vegas. It's up to Las Vegas to prove that they can meet the metrics of a good market, a good TV population, good attendance. That's for Las Vegas to prove. But what this proved was that the casino issues are no longer radioactive, per se, that all of the leagues are adapting to the omnipresence of casino gaming today. And I think that only means good things for the future of sports betting and other issues important to your audience.
Now, a quick question. Does the over, in your opinion, and you hate to extrapolate and try and read between the lines, and I'm going to get Payne's take on this real quick because he's got to defend his city. Does the overwhelming approval of league owners by a vote of 31-1 say anything about where we're headed in regards to legalization? Of course, Payne, before we let Jeff jump in, can you explain why Miami was the one team abstaining from us getting a franchise out here?
I'm not really sure what took place there. Obviously, Stephen Ross was the lone owner to vote against that Raiders relocation, and it could have very well been, you know, Las Vegas, the stigma of gambling and sports betting. But he did come out immediately and had this exact quote. My position today was that as owners and as a league, we owe it to the fans to do everything to stay in the communities that have supported us until all options have been exhausted, and I don't believe that was the case in this instance. So now let's just say this. He's done more for community initiatives than any other Dolphins owner. He's the largest contributor to Michigan University. So I'd love to give him the benefit of the doubt and believe exactly what he said.
All right, we'll give him a free pass for now, at least for now. But, Jeff, should we kind of take this as a tacit endorsement of the league's changing stance on gambling?
I think what it is an endorsement of is that markets are changing. The understanding of owners about the new dynamics is increasing, and that it is a positive, a net positive for sports betting. This is not a vote for sports betting. That's a different decision. But I think this suggests that we're entering into a period where we can have more informed discussions, where some of the vitriol will be gone, where I think we'll see a little bit more open-mindedness. We've spent a lot of time with a lot of NFL owners over the past year, with a lot of NBA owners, with folks in Major League Baseball and beyond. And the feelings are universal with all of these folks, that a new day is dawning, that sports betting is only a matter of time. And I got to give credit where credit's due. As hard as our team works, as much has been done here, nothing did more to speed this conversation along than the emergence of daily fantasy sports. And I've had owners in each one of those leagues say to me, ask me, what is the difference between daily fantasy sports and sports betting? And it was a rhetorical question. They knew the answer in their mind, and that was that there wasn't a distinction. That single issue has moved this issue of sports betting along. It's put all of us in a better place, and it has increased the speed at which we will see a legalized and regulated sports betting market here in the United States.
You're definitely preaching to the choir when it pertains to daily fantasy. I mean, we talked about all the time within the gambling industry that these two weren't distant family members. They were more or less brothers and sisters in the same family tree. It's just a question of exactly how you wanted to try and position it. And without getting into some of the specifics about the Canada discussions or the owners you spoke to, was there anything else other than daily fantasy that really changed their thought process? I mean, if we look at this timeline, we've gone from having zero professional teams, and I don't want to sell the Las Vegas 51 short in the Las Vegas area, to now having two. And what was seemingly impossible, probably as recently as maybe, let's call it 18 months ago, the NFL is one of those teams coming here, not Major League Baseball, not the NBA, who have had commissioners that probably took a much more progressive stance in terms of what this city stood for.
I think there are a lot of things that have contributed to it. I think daily fantasy is the most tangible we can look at. Certainly Adam Silver gave permission to others to get on board with this when he took such a prominent leadership role, and I can't give him enough credit for what he's done. Declining TV ratings, of course, force you to look a little bit more creatively as to how you're going to attract customers. You look at some of these sports, their average age of viewers in their 50s. That's not going to cut it as they move forward. Speaking of viewers, one of the groups that learned the power of daily fantasy sports were the broadcasters. They learned what can happen when you have that many more eyeballs, that much more engagement. They grew interested in this issue. They too have discussions with the leagues. The unions grew interested in this. They see what it does to the value of the TV contracts and the possibility for more revenue for them. So I think there's a variety of things that happen there. And one of the things I'll close with is, and I've heard this now from folks, again, at each one of the leagues, whether it's league representatives or owners, they go to Las Vegas and they acknowledge they hadn't been there in a decade or two decades or maybe more. And they say to themselves, we missed it. We missed the corporatization of Las Vegas, the increase in regulation, the way the business is run, the entertainment quality. They still have this image of Las Vegas that was quite dated. And they acknowledge that's played a role in their shifting opinion here. Unfortunately, in the 24 hours since Oakland has received and since Las Vegas has received the Raiders, I've heard a lot of that old dated image of Las Vegas referenced. And I've heard it on very prominent websites and radio shows where people are still sticking with this idea that it's the Vegas of yesterday. That's disappointing because I think when you look at the Vegas of today, in many respects, it's like a lot of other diversified entertainment markets around the country. And I think the football team there will fare similarly to how it's fared elsewhere because you now have this foundation of a stronger economy, of a diversified economy.
I will say one thing that maybe, I don't want to say controversial, but was interesting. There was a tweet that caught a little bit of momentum talking about a brothel owner in Nye County, about 70 miles outside Las Vegas, claiming he's going to offer discounts for any Raiders fans or employees that should make the trek out there. That is a little bit different in terms of entertainment than what you're going to find in some of the other NFL cities, but I have to imagine that's not exactly the direction that the league intended to focus on. And thought about it being a major concern. When we look, Jeff, at kind of – go ahead. I'm sorry.
On that point, I'm obviously not going to take the brothel argument head on. But I will say this. Anyone who thinks that Vegas is somehow going to offer people opportunities that they can't find in New York, L.A., Seattle, Chicago, or anywhere else – is crazy. And I think we've learned that lesson. And hopefully people are a little bit wiser as they think through the prospects in Las Vegas.
Oh, and I think you're spot on with that analysis and talking about how this city doesn't try and mask what it is from a transparency standpoint. And I think that kind of flows into sports gambling from a legalization standpoint coast to coast. And I guess it leads to my follow-up question. We know about PASPA being a major remaining obstacle for legalization. How, in your opinion, do you see the AGA's role changing a little bit when we're talking about assuaging some of the concerns that NFL owners, fans, or people living in yesteryear may still have about what it means bringing a team to the city.
Yeah, I think we're pacing very, very well on this issue. All of the various interests here are moving either from a state of neutrality to a state of strong interest. You know, if you would have tackled this issue 10 years ago, 15 issues years ago or more, you would have had a good deal of opposition. I'm having a hard time right now finding organized opposition. There's still some antiquated beliefs out there, some misperceptions as to what the industry is. There are some who somehow fear that if we have legalized sports betting, it will threaten the integrity of the games, completely and perhaps blissfully unaware that we have illegal sports betting today, and it is threatening the integrity of games. So I think that there's still some misinformation out there that needs to be addressed, but by and large, the organized opposition has disappeared, and it's really coming now down to a degree of interest, a degree of passion here, and how much are various leagues, owners, other interested parties going to fight to get this done. I've said on your show before, our goal at the AGA is to do as much of the work for these Capitol Hill staffers and members of Congress as we can. And what I mean by that, I don't want to rely on them to work out the differences of opinion between leagues, gaming industry, broadcasters, and others. We're all going to work that out amongst ourselves so that when we finally go to Capitol Hill and push a piece of legislation, it will be one that has already earned the support of all of the interested parties here. And because of that, it'll be a bill that's able to get done in relatively speedy time.
No, it definitely makes a lot of sense when we talk about some of those concepts and try and figure out what needs to be done by all parties. We know everyone is not necessarily going to be on board right from the start. It's a credit to the organization and what you guys have done to raise that level of education and creating that awareness to allow us to have these comprehensive discussions, which I guess flows perfectly into the month of March and what it means for sports betting, the community as a whole. Your organization put out numbers, 70 million brackets will get filled out, $10.4 billion in total bets, $295 million going to change hands in Nevada. And to put that in perspective for folks that want a little bit of context, that's more than double what we see wagered on the Super Bowl legally here. And then when we talk about 97% of these bets being placed illegally, how does the AGA arrive at some of these figures? And I guess the bigger question from there, what becomes the primary takeaway from them?
Well, so let me answer it in the order you put it out there. As for how we arrive at it, I'll acknowledge it's a pretty difficult thing. How do you estimate what is an illegal black market that's all happening in the dark? It is quite difficult. What we use is the best of the publicly available data that's out there, combined with a government body, the National Gambling Impact Study Commission, which took a look at this, combined with what's happening in Nevada today, to put forward an estimate of what would happen or what is happening nationally. These are absolutely the best numbers that are available, but none of us are really going to know how big this market is until we pull it out of the dark, put some sunlight on it, regulate this thing, and allow people to do it in an appropriate way. We're quite confident our numbers are conservative. We estimate that annually Americans are spending about $150 billion in sports betting. Only 3% of that is happening legally in Nevada. March Madness is the single greatest activity around betting. The irony there is off the charts, given the NCAA's, how should we phrase it, naive approach to these issues. So the demand for sports betting has never been greater than it is today. And the opportunities with sports betting have never been greater. You know, we're slowly, maybe not so slowly, inching in on a day where most of this is going to be in-game betting with real-time algorithms, with ways of keeping people engaged and interested like we've never seen before. I think the time for sports betting is going to get so exciting, so captivating, that we're hitting this market at exactly the right time, and this business is going to take off like wildfire. in the U.S.
You mentioned the NCAA and their obvious naivete when you consider you go to their website for the official tournament bracket, and in big giant letters on the bottom, it just happens to say don't bet on it. And clearly that's why CBS is spending billions upon billions of dollars to pay for college basketball, because we know everyone stays glued to their seat to watch Xavier and Gonzaga go at it in the Elite Eight without a vested financial interest. But I guess along those same lines, Jeff, we know that Vegas has kind of become the unofficial home for college basketball. If you go through the calendar of events here, not only from conference tournaments that take place here in the month of March, but the individual showcases throughout the year, and I've had a chance to kind of talk to folks closer to that discussion and what needed to take place. How does the AGA interaction go with the NCAA? Because I can understand kind of where they're coming from a protection standpoint of 18 and 19 year old athletes, if they think there's, you know, impropriety there versus dealing with the professional leagues. Do those conversations take on a much different tenor?
So two things on that. I'm going to disagree with you as strongly as I possibly can on understanding the NCAA's position. I agree that unpaid amateur athletes are at risk from organized crime and others who might want to sway them to behave a certain way on the basketball court or on the football field or elsewhere. I completely disagree with the idea that the best way to protect them is to put our head in the sand and pretend that betting isn't taking place. If the NCAA wanted to protect these athletes, they would be the strongest proponents of regulated sports betting today. And that simply isn't the case. The only way we protect these folks is by bringing it out of the dark, by doing this in a regulated manner, by tracking the data and figuring out where things are happening that shouldn't be happening. We can't do that today, and the NCAA has their head in the sand. While I can say we've met with every major sports league that's out there, we have not met with the NCAA. We've not had constructive conversations on that front. We have met with some league commissioners, and I think there's room for progress. But this is a group right now that is their naivete is dangerous, and it's going to be a big issue to overcome in this debate.
Has the NCAA just openly flat out said, hey, we have no interest in meeting and discussing these topics with you? Or how have some of those discussions gone without obviously, you know, getting anybody on either side of the discussion table in trouble here?
Yeah, a big issue with the NCAA, unlike the other leagues, which are very centralized, and we can all name the commissioner of each of the major leagues, it's hard to find a power source within the NCAA, and it's why individual conference commissioners sometimes wield even more power. Of course, we have a head of the NCAA, but again, it's a different type of structure, and we're having to adapt to that structure and work with, you know, kind of work through the commissioners of the various conferences.
So you think trying to get the more influential commissioners on board makes more sense than going to the NCAA directly itself, given the structure?
Absolutely, and even then, Todd,
yep.
I'm not overly optimistic of where the NCAA is going to come down on this thing. So I'm torn. These issues are obviously tied. Do you compensate college athletes or not? And I'm torn on that issue as a former college athlete. I used to have strong opinions on that issue. But I'm torn on that issue. But what I'm not torn on is if you want to protect student athletes, there's only one way to do that, and that's to do it in a regulated manner and get this stuff out of back alleys in the dark of night.
It definitely makes a lot of sense. And I think hopefully with the professional leagues setting that example and precedent, not only by moving teams here, but maintaining that open dialogue as it pertains to legalization, that the NCAA will ultimately get on board to try and make for a safer environment, not only for the athletes involved, but the institutions, and knowing some of the things that take place in and around college sports now, that the anticipated, or however they want to try and look at it, potential for impropriety can be removed from the equation completely by, as you mentioned, shining light on the topic. Jeff, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy day, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, where can our listeners go to learn more, and maybe more importantly, what they can do on their own from a grassroots style to help create awareness on this topic? I know you guys have a pretty strong initiative at sportsbettingamerica.com, but what are some of the things our listeners can do to help take this discussion forward?
So there are two places they can go. One is AmericanGaming.org, and just learn a little bit more about our association, who we represent, and why we're leading this charge. And then specific to sports, as you mentioned, sportsbettinginamerica.com is a place where they can go. They can learn everything we're doing on the sports betting front, the latest research, as well as how to get involved. This is going to be an old school grassroots style campaign where it is going to be about contacting your member of Congress, contacting the media, calling into talk radio, getting out there and letting people know that this is a mainstream issue. So the more that your listeners can engage in that mainstream traditional way about the common nature of sports betting, the better off we'll all be. We, again, I compliment Daily Fantasy Sports. What Daily Fantasy Sports did was take something that millions of Americans are doing and bring it into the light and make it mainstream and show everybody from presidents to members of Congress, governors and beyond, that this is an activity that is widely embraced. Anything your listeners can do to further that sense, the better off we'll be.
We can try and do our best to light a fire under them at every chance we get. Obviously, an issue that Payne and I are both very passionate about. He's the president and CEO of the American Gaming Association. You can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Freeman, AGA. Jeff, thanks for joining us today, and we look forward to having a more comprehensive discussion when we regroup closer to the beginning of football season. One last thing. Four teams left on the big board. Who's cutting down the nets Monday night in Phoenix?
You know, I've got my I've got North Carolina in my pool, and I think that might help me come in second place to the guy I'm looking at here, who's got two. This guy here on my team, you got Payne, I got Steve here. Steve pulled up, put in two brackets, and we got about 50 people here, and his brackets are 1 and 2 in the pool. 1 and 2 in the pool. How does that happen?
You know what? As long as somebody is making sure it's a transparent process and you guys are able to make sure that Steve didn't sneak one of those brackets in somewhere between the round of 16 and the Elite Eight, then we know the integrity of the game is being upheld.
I still got a guy that's going to take him outside.
Hey, that's all that matters. All you have to do is eliminate the problem, and then somebody else can reap the benefits. But thanks again, Jeff. Appreciate it, and look forward to the continued work from not only you but the rest of your organization as well.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
Always great getting Jeff's strong opinions on a topic we know he's so clearly passionate about, along with his organization, Payne. And when we talk about the evolution of where legalization of sports betting is going, have to imagine getting the Raiders here in Las Vegas is clearly a step in the right direction.
Yeah, it's a huge help. No doubt about it. Hockey was, I guess, the first domino. I know that's your beloved sport, but doesn't, you know, I don't know what that's going to do in Vegas, especially once
the football
doesn't
really move
team.
The needle. I'm honest and realistic here. It doesn't move the needle in terms of the gambling discussion.
What happens when football gets there to the hockey team?
I think that this city's going to have to try and figure it out its identity pretty quickly in terms of how it'll handle multiple professional sports teams. A lot of discussion that these may not be the only two professional franchises when we're looking at the landscape in 2020, but don't want to speculate on the next direction. I just worry that the city needs to learn how to walk before it starts to run, and where everyone talks about all the tourists that'll come in and everything else that we can pick up. As far as filling these stadiums, I'm cautiously optimistic as a sports fan. I obviously want it here, but at the same time, the last thing I'd want is Las Vegas to take on and bite off more than it can really chew.
You're a pessimist. It's okay.
I mean, that's kind of how
I was a little shocked they decided to the stadium build out was going to be that big. 65,000. I thought you know you don't make something super small, but you make it cozy enough to where, you know, the stadium's filled. You cut down your costs a little bit. I know they're relying on it being, you know, the largest traveled city with tourists in the country.
I think this is part of a larger play. That if you're going to build a stadium, you may as well do it the right way. I have to give MGM credit and AEG for the way they built T-Mobile to create a state-of-the-art venue for concerts. What I think we're talking about with a stadium somewhere right off the strip is that not only will we have a football team playing games here, you'll have major concerts, you'll have the WrestleManias of the world, you'll have Final Fours. The sky really becomes the limit to have a marquee venue out here to maybe try and pull some of those events away from Los Angeles and or other cities like a Phoenix that are building these venues. I just think having everything within a 4-hour proximity to one another going to make for a very interesting pull on demand to continue to fill a venue of that size.
Final Four would be fun there. Conference championship weekend is fantastic. When you talk about the Mountain West, the Pac-12, the Western Athletic a little earlier in that week, but that's a great week to be out in Vegas. So the Final Four would be interesting there.
And I think the one event that makes an awful lot of sense once that stadium gets built, don't be surprised if the Pac-12 brings their football championship out of the Bay Area to Las Vegas as well, knowing exactly what you alluded to, how well the conference tournament has done in Las Vegas, that I think people would book their tickets well in advance. And even if they weren't able to see their favorite teams participate, it's a great weekend to be here and fills a low occupancy time in early December.
Are you pushing towards season tickets? Are you going to pick anything up? I know you mentioned wrestling. Are you, you're a booger eater? Are you going to these
no, that, WrestleMania that won't events? Be my thing, but all the discussion has been about PSLs, and so there is the discussion along with some of my close colleagues here about investing in those. The problem being for us is that I can't go watch Raider games on Sundays. That's completely out of the equation, even if I wanted to. It's the Thursday night and Monday night games, but it's not going to change the commitment we have to do to adhering to the NFL and being able to pick winners.
Can I tell you this? Going to an NFL game is the worst thing ever. And I am overrated. The largest...
Overrated in the grand scheme of things.
I'm the largest NFL guy there is. It sucks. Like, it becomes an all-day event. You don't get to see all the games. It's not in HD. You can have the best seat in the damn house, and it's not really that great of a seat. You know, if I'm going to a football game, and this is going to sound hoity, you have to be in the box just for the reason of the TVs.
That's not I need hoity. The TVs. That's just reality. Yeah. That's just reality.
I need the TVs to see what's going on in the other games. I can't dedicate myself an entire day to one game. So you know, going to those games stink.
I'm right there with you. It's got to be a standalone type event, and you go more for the spectacle yep. than anything else. And who knows? Maybe 5-10 years from now, we'll be able to invite our listeners out to the Bet the Board box for a Raiders game or a playoff game or something along those lines. But getting ahead of ourselves, and we talk about investments – when we look at the two national semifinal games, we know there's not a whole lot of wiggle room this late in the year. You gave the PSA earlier talking about how folks shouldn't look to try and double down or take any winnings they've made this tournament, looking to grow that substantially, or on the flip side, taking any money they're down, trying to win it all back in two games. Do we see an investment opportunity in South Carolina Gonzaga or Oregon versus North Carolina?
I will say this. I've been very strict about this. And battled you off air about this many times, so our listeners can kind of get a sneak peek into what goes on. I am adamant about not giving out things I don't actually bet myself, and so I haven't bet anything yet. I think if we do, we give it out on Twitter. But I will say this: you've heard from what we've done for the last hour or so. The Gonzaga line awfully short, so that could be it'd be Gonzaga or nothing. Oregon, I think, eventually becomes the side, so that could be potential for us. So, I mean, those are the two ways I would lean right now, but haven't bet anything myself. And if we do, obviously, we'll give it out on the Bet the Board Pod Twitter feed.
Yeah, always you can find updates and great information at Bet the Board Pod. And of course, bettheboardpodcast.com. Still some great gear left to be purchased as we try and close, I guess, the book on our sports year for 2016 to 2017. Baseball for me always kind of jump starts the look ahead there, so encourage folks to check that out. And if there is a pick, it'll be posted there. But clearly you have two of the strongest leans you're going to get from the best in the business with Payne. And when we talk about the futures, I think given the fact that we both lean towards Gonzaga and considering laying the points, you could do a lot worse than taking the Zags at 7-4, maybe rooting for an upset on the other half of the draw and having a nice ticket going into Monday night. But be sure to check the podcast feed. But for our guests, at Jeff Freeman AGA, you can follow him on Twitter, at Dave Mason BOL, you can follow him there as well. Dave here each and every week contributing some of the best book perspective in the business. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. It's been a blast taking you from 68 down to 4. Hopefully we'll have some investment advice for the games on Saturday. And make sure to check back on Monday. You just never know what the national championship will present, and maybe an opportunity to see you at the window.